Hello, out there, Radio Land. Thank you for joining us. This is the Bible Brothers and Beer podcast. We do appreciate you just spending the time to be able to listen to us. And yeah, tonight we have another special guest. So let's get started. Sitting here, drinking beer, talking guys, amen. Killing time, living life with some down home friends. All right. The drinking started. Hasn't it?
We'll get there.
We will get there. Is it? Do you like that stuff?
It's really good.
All right. So my name is Richard, and we have our usual
suspects.
Who's to my left here?
C-Note Caleb.
C-Note.
Good to see everybody. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Actually, I don't see everybody, but it's good to be with everybody.
What's up, Caleb? I'm Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. And we have a special guest tonight. And I'll kick it over to Dom. Welcome, Dom.
I'm Dom.
Hey, Dom.
Dino Dom.
Dominate. We're dominating.
Caleb thought it was funny to make a Dominator joke this morning. I'm like,
we were at the gym, just for the record. We
haven't heard that one since I was in third grade.
Dom the Dominator? Is that what?
Yeah. And another guy in our fantasy league in church changed his name to I Will Dominate You. And next day, Caleb thinks he's funny and using it. So,
No.
You're welcome, Radio Land.
Yeah. This guy gets jokes. Caleb's got C-Note. has jokes. So, yeah, thank you, Dom, for joining us. We do appreciate you spending the time to be able to just come in and just record, you know, and just, you know, we have a subject here that I think we can all probably relate to, right? So, I got to apologize first. Let's tell us a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind. Just who Dom is.
Yeah, no, first and foremost, I'm grateful that I'm here, that I even got the invite. A special group of guys, and I mean that genuinely. When I get to surround myself with like-minded men that are also leaders, that are also believers, that follow the Lord with all their heart, and I get to just spend some time with them, the answer is always yes. And it really, that's how I got plugged into, you know, this table. I think a church, Caleb, was the first time that we met, and then he invited me to breakfast, and we connected, and every once in a while we'd say hi and talk about sports, and then he invited me to the men's group, and then I got to go to the men's group, and I got to connect with you guys, and had some amazing conversations, saw you guys' spirit, and you know, here we are, and getting to have this conversation today. And sure enough, from myself personally, I really didn't grow up in the church at all. Mm-hmm. I actually grew up in a trailer park, food stamps, welfare, very poor background, not a home of faith at all. Family dysfunction, family high in debt. It was very, when I look back, not the greatest environment from a circumstantial perspective. But the one thing that I did have was I did have a dad that he grew up in like more of the hood mentality, like very gangster-esque. And he decided that no matter what happens in his life, he's going to be an amazing father. And so he did that. He did his best to provide the best life that he could. Even though he didn't make a ton, he was always there, supported me in every endeavor that I did. And for myself, I always wanted to pursue the dream of playing in the NFL. And I did that from like the age of 3 on. Like I just knew it, that that's what I wanted to do. And it all started and stemmed from him encouraging me, being there, showing me what it's like to work hard. and even though I didn't have maybe some of the other characteristics that would make a good man, I did have one that was from him of discipline and working hard. So grateful for that. Got the opportunity to play in the NFL a very short period of time. Played Division I football at the University of Wyoming. Got into camp with the Atlanta Falcons. And then after that, played some indoor arena football. And then after that, played some professional rugby with the camp of Team USA. And then after that, I was like, you know what? I gotta hang up these cleats. I gotta go pursue a real profession. And so then that's when I kind of started entrepreneurship and went door to door. And I actually been here in this area for the last, I'd say, 8 or so years. I grew up in Colorado Springs, and then I've been going to Thorn Creek now for like two solid years. And it's the first time in my life that I found an actual church that I can call home, that I love, and it's really impacted and changed my life. So that's very where I'm
nice.
At.
Very nice. Yeah, thank you for sharing. We have a sports star in their house. Let's go.
Kayla.
Dom looked over his shoulder. Like he was like, who are you talking about?
Exactly.
I'm like, talking to you, man. Come on. Well, thank you for sharing.
Did you ever catch a pass from an NFL quarterback?
Of course. I have caught lots of passes from lots of NFL quarterbacks. See?
It's better than the rest of us.
I've caught zero passes.
Ever. From anybody.
From anybody.
Caleb, you ever get in the batter's box against a major league pitcher?
I have. Yep. Yep. Didn't do well, if that's your next question. Didn't get any hits, but... That's why I'm sitting here.
So. You have to define the word better. What does better actually mean? You know, because the way that I see it, everything is better at this table because we're all saved, right? And that's the most important thing at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Go.
Yeah.
That's why you
rejoice. Your name is written in heaven.
Yep. Yeah. Amen. Yeah. That's the ultimate success story.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks, Dom, for, you know, just sharing. We do appreciate it. So I'm going to kick it over to Caleb. He, you know, Caleb's our question guy. He's a list of questions that he wants to ask, and then we'll just talk about it. So what do you got,
Caleb?
Let's
do it. Let's do it. Thank you. I consider it a privilege to ask questions. So I guess, Dom, first of all, it's awesome that you're here. You are, besides being my lifting partner and making me extremely sore, barely sitting in this chair right now, but I appreciate kind of the man that you are. So my first question is, what is one thing you feel God is teaching you or has taught you about how you work?
That's a great question. You ask amazing questions already. It's the first one.
Thank you.
Yeah. The only hard part about this is now I'm just staring into your eyes while I answer this question. But nonetheless.
I feel special.
I've actually learned a lot over the years just around the world of sports and athletics. And I find that the world of athletics has some of the same principles that carry over into business and work and the way that you communicate with people. And for me, I've had this one word that I try to... So I actually have had this epiphany that I had from having a podcast that I had once upon a time, interviewing a ton of people. And the podcast that I had was The Game Goes On, where I interviewed ex-former athletes and how they transitioned from athletics to business. And they all struggled. They all struggled with like self-identity, and they gained depression and trying to figure out what's next in life. And I was always that person who's like, nah, like that's not going to be me. That's not going to be me. I have the Lord. I'm saved. Right. And so I'd kind of just like brush off. Sure enough, sports was over and I just like, boom, stabbed in the heart. And I realized that like I put so much of everything that I had into this thing, which was football. And then it was gone. And then it was like, now what? And I have this saying now through those lessons that I tell people all the time. It's like, never, ever, ever put your identity in anything that can be taken away from you. Mm-hmm. Ever. And the only thing that really can't ever be taken away from you is your relationship with the Lord. Right? Mm-hmm. You could probably say that characteristics as well, like integrity, humility, those things can't be taken away from you either. But I mean, they could probably change over time as well. But nonetheless, through work, the one thing that I have really gathered of a lesson that I try to have from an identity purpose in the workspace that stems from my relationship with the Lord and who I was, because I grew up, like I shared, food stamps, welfare, struggled. But I made a ton of mistakes, lots of bad things, deep in sin. And now when I look at other people, I realize that people aren't perfect because I was not perfect. And now I've realized that I've been saved and I've been forgiven. So even in the workplace, when people make mistakes, I just instantly can go to the place of like, well, I know you're not perfect. So the one word that I always hold on to now is empathy. Mm. And I ask the questions of like, well, why did this not happen? What was going on? Was your kid sick? Was your kid struggling? Did you have to do X, Y, Z and you couldn't finish because of this, right? Yeah. Just like talk to me, right? And ask good questions and care. And through empathy, people feel on the other end that you care about them and you get the best out of them.
That's great. What about you two? What's God taught you about work, or what's he teaching you about work?
I would say that through my work is I take it too seriously, and I think God has tried to tell me that I need to back off a little and realize the other important things. I can get very much like Martha, of just like, this needs to be done, this needs to be done, and not even realize Jesus is in the room. Mm-hmm. And be like, actually, he'll like me better because I'm doing all the work. You know, I totally can get on that mindset of I need stuff to do and all that. I think I've realized lately that I work so much and like I don't do anything for fun. Even around my family, I'm just like, yeah, what needs to be done around the house? Let me do this and let me do this. And like, to be honest with you, I never catch up and there, I never run out of the amount of work that I can do. Mm-hmm. And I'm never available for fun. I'm never available. I'm just, I feel like I've made a God out of responsibility, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think if I'm answering that question, I think God is telling me, you need to watch that because that might be in the way of my relationship of what I want with you.
Mm. Mm. That's good. Didn't want to interrupt, but there's the verse in just regards to just work. That's Colossians 3:23-24. It's whatever you do, work at it all with your heart as working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. Is the Lord Christ you are serving? And for me, when I was playing sports, I think I did this the best. And because it was like just when I became saved, where I would like lift weights and I'm like, all right, Lord, this is for you. This is for you. It would like give me more strength, like genuinely. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do one more rep because Lord, you're watching. Right. And the more we can have that mentality, the more we show up more powerfully. Right. And the more that you actually have more peace, your joy, and a stronger relationship with Him. But if we do some of the things that I know you mentioned that you're like, hey, I got to be careful of, right? You work so hard that you realize that the Lord's not even in the room, right? That can then cause some of the destruction, chaos, self-serving things. So I think that what you just shared is what I think a lot of people struggle with. I've struggled with many times. And I just appreciate the vulnerability because that is probably a true pandemic for competitive people, for men. Mm-hmm. We really want to strive to be something of significance sometimes. And I know that's something that I struggle with significantly.
Well, and I think it comes from a place for me where I prayed for either my job or my family or prayed for it so much. Mm. And so I feel like He gave it to me. I can be responsible and I can take care of this. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to let it go. So there's something in me that is like, I have to earn it, you know, that I can I can hedge my bets on God gave it to me, but I can keep it, you know, and deep down inside, I don't want to admit that's not true, you know, because the reality is even the good things, even your family, your kids or whatever, they can be taken to you. As we look at Job, yeah, it all can be taken from you. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, no, not if I'm a faithful worker and I'm grateful, you know, mm-hmm. And that's, I guess I would look at it as that's my 3-pound brain saying, yeah, this makes sense. And I'll say it, but I know I'm not the only one. Mm. Definitely know I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm throwing any stone. You three, definitely not. You know, there's guys out there that are like that, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's good. Richard?
What do I think?
I have to admit, I've been impressed with your ability to have the right perspective on work. So
on work.
Yeah. We've talked about this a lot.
Yeah. We have. And you know, when it comes to work, we all have our specialties, right? We all have our quote unquote lane that we're in, you know, whatever that looks like. You know, and I'm in IT. I take care of systems, data, right? And you know, I go in there. I'm going to come at this with a different perspective. So my thoughts are, whatever work it is that we do, we're going to do it as best as we can, right? Whatever our expertise is, we're going to go in there. We're going to put our head down. We're going to take care of stuff, get it done. You know what I'm saying? Like, get it done. And I think you take that, you take your passion for work, like you would have your passion would be the same when it comes to God and the Bible and learning the word. Right. And when it comes to, this is something that I'm really, I really do appreciate when it comes to where I work, is that I don't have any problems showing my faith to my coworkers. I really don't.
Love that.
Like whether they like it or not, I don't care. It sounds insensitive, but that's just how I am, right? I'm going to talk about my faith to people if I feel like they're open to listening to it. I'm not going to shove it down their throat. That's not me. But by me speaking about my faith and them and my coworkers knowing, it opens them up. Now I know 3/4 of my department are believers, which is amazing. It's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, that I come in with a different attitude at that point, right? Knowing that Daniel, who we've had here in the podcast, who I work with, you know, we'll see each other in a coffee room, and we will literally sit there and stand there for 30 minutes just talking about a subject that's in the Bible. You know, where did this word originate from in the Bible? And what does it mean? How is it written in Hebrew, right? And he has that knowledge, right? So, you know, whenever I do have a conversation with him, it's very educational, and I appreciate that. You know, and we'll sit there and just go at it. Not in a bad way, we just talk about, because when he talks, I'll have all these questions that just develop in my head, you know? So my perspective is you're going to do your job. You're going to go into work. You're going to do your job. And I think that for me is like, showing that confidence and faith might have an impact on somebody, which might help them. Right. It's like, oh, hey, Richard he doesn't care. Like if anybody knows that he's a believer, right? Why can't I be like that? Why can't you? Why can't you be like that? You know, take that confidence that you have in God and put that into your work. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Why not? You know, because you have, work is work. It's, I got to do this again. I got to go in the office, you know, I got to look at code. I got to look at data. I got to work on some systems. I got to do some financial stuff. I got to, deal with people, whatever it is, right? Like, it can get very...
or maybe climbing into a sewer.
Whatever it is, right? Like, you know, God gave you that talent to be able to do what you do when it comes to your work, right? And that's something you have to go in full confidence and just be confident in, like you are confident in your faith.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? It's the same thing, right? It's challenging. Work can be challenging. Faith can be challenging. Listen, I've been in places where, like, my faith has been so low. And it's like, how do I get out of it? I've been in, you know, places where, like, I just have no confidence in my work or what I'm doing. It's like, how do I get out of it? Right? Do you pull up your bootstraps and just go, right? You just grab your Bible and just start reading. Like, you know, it's that whole confidence thing for me. It's like, just to be able to be confident in the work that you do, be confident in the faith that you have in God, in the Bible, in His Word, right? So, and just, you know what? Be nice. That's the biggest thing.
Be nice.
We were talking earlier before we started recording about, you know, people leave their jobs because of their boss. Right? I truly believe that. I've left jobs because of my boss. I didn't care to work for him or that person anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's something that you think about, right? It's like, okay, should I have stayed? Well, you know what? Maybe God's calling me to try something else, to make a difference somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, so those are my thoughts. Answer your own question, Caleb.
All right, I will answer my own question. I think, like Dom, you know, being involved in athletics, you have a sense of identity that's naturally just part of it. I mean, you pour so much time, effort into athletics, And it's the same with any other craft, right, that you do from a young age. I struggled with the identity of sports, even with intentionally not trying to make it my identity. I remember my parents telling me, you know, you're more than sports. You're more than whatever you're doing. Take school seriously. You may not be an athlete, you know, after X age, right? One of the things that I'm learning is this idea, and our pastor actually said like an earth-shattering thing to me, and I'm going to read it. It says, you are loved even when you are not producing. And I think that my whole life, I felt like I was loved based on whatever I was putting out on the field, whatever I was doing in the classroom, whatever grade I was getting, you know, and then it kind of just translated right into work. It's like, if you're not producing, you're not working hard, you're not doing, like, then I had this feeling that people didn't love me, or they didn't love me as much, right? And I think when I got a family, right, my wife pushed me to think differently, which I deeply appreciate. My kids unintentionally pushed me to think differently. And then all of a sudden you get so tired putting everything into work and kind of climbing that corporate ladder or putting in the hours or producing or being recognized for how good you are at this, whatever it is, right? I think I got completely misled to believe that, you know, God's love was based on whoever I was at work, or however, whatever title I had, or however many people I was affecting, or even, you know, good things that were overemphasized, like being a leader, caring about people, like investing, right? Those are all good things, but when done too much become bad things. So that's what God's teaching me, is that I am loved by him despite what I produce at work, despite how hard I work, even though, what, like you all said, you can honor God and you can honor the talents that he provided by working hard and getting the best out of yourself.
You both had similar testimonies in regards to what you guys experienced with your relationship with work, where it was about the works versus the faith, right? And that's the one thing that makes Christianity and different than all, is it's not about our works, right? Obviously, with fruit, you know, comes amazing fruit when you are saved, but it's not about how you show up from a work perspective of, I'm doing XYZ, so therefore I'm going to heaven, or I prove my worth, or it's like, no matter what, God already loves you, right?
It's not a transaction.
Yep.
It's not transactional. Right. It's funny. I was told that by Dr. J, you know, and it's that's kind of stuck with me, where it's like, if I do this, then I'm going to heaven. Or if I do this, I'm going to get this. Right. No, it's not really a transaction. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Or even worse, if I do this, I'm going to hell.
Guilt. Yeah. Just do good. Right. And believe in God and know that he loves you. You know, sometimes it's hard to think about that, you know, God can love us so much, even when we
fall short.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I appreciate everybody's thoughts, and I think it's obviously an important subject. I guess this leads me to my next question. And the next question, you know, even if you are taking the right perspective on work, right, you're not, you know, to the best of your ability, you're not putting your identity in work and trying to balance it. I guess work can get busy and activity can be heavy. So I wonder how you all kind of pursue this idea of being present at home and kind of balancing presence at home and excellence at work, even in a healthy perspective about work.
Yeah, I'll start us off. For me, I get to create my own schedule, and I get to create the activities that I do every single day. So first, I am blessed that I'm able to do that, because I know that everybody gets to choose. Also, the only person that gets to fire me is me. So at the end of the day, I know that's slightly different. But from the perspective, what I do that is helpful is that I have the intentional conversations with my wife, and I let her know, and she agrees upon it. So I ask her, like, do you agree that this is okay, that I will work at these times, and I will do X, Y, Z at this time? And if she says yes, then we do have a mutual understanding that that's that. And then all the other times, I make sure no matter what, I'm extremely intentional and extremely present in those moments, and work stays back, right? Because I'm like, work can never end. I could literally work 18 hours a day if I really wanted to, because there's always something to do. And so for me, I say, hey, I'm going to work Monday through Saturday, okay? I'm going to work at these times, right? Sunday, I will give you 100% of all my energy, no matter what, be the most intentional husband, father possible. I think that's what society fails to recognize, is that they measure your intentionality by time, but I actually believe it's more about quality and presence. And so you ask the question, like, how do you be more present? Like, I could get home from work and I could just flip on the TV and watch for, you know, football and Netflix, and my kids over there wanting my attention. I don't spend no time with them. Yeah. Like, in quality time, like, I'm still in the room and I'm spending quote unquote time, right? And I'm spending 5, 6, 7 hours a day with them in that context, right? But they're not feeling the love, the presence. They're not getting the attention that they need. Or you could spend one entire full day and give them everything possible. And that is 10 times better, in my personal opinion. And I've heard from really wise men, they say that they've done that. And I've heard it from also the kid of those men. And every single one of those sons, because I've had the conversations with the sons, has said that their dad was an amazing father. Mm-hmm. Was an amazing father. Never, but on the other side, I've had others that's like, yeah, you know, my dad didn't show up. And a lot of it comes too is like, when you get to be super intentional and present, I think you do have the Holy Spirit a lot more. Like, you're really just focused on the Lord. The last thing that I was going to say is, I find myself also a lot more present when I am a lot closer with the Lord, right? When I am doing the right things, when I'm in the Word, when I'm worshiping, when I'm serving, when I'm coming to church, I'm praying, I am way more intentional about being present with my family and separating the two between each other. When I am distracted by the world, distracted by social media, distracted by things that really don't matter when it's all said and done, when I leave this earth, that's when I can never be super intentional and focused on what matters most in that moment. And so I think for us as men, we have to find everything in our power to eliminate distractions, eliminate sin, eliminate the things that can really push us away from God's purpose for us. And our purpose is to obviously, you know, love the Lord with all of our heart and glorify Him with all that we do. And that is being a good husband. That's being a good father. That's also being a good steward at work.
So I'm curious, when you have you work in, you know, Monday through Saturday, and mm-hmm. you have that one Sunday for family, like, does work ever come up? How your day at work was, how your week was? I'm just curious, because, like, I think because that takes up the, like, 90% of your week, right? Do you have that conversation about how your week went with your wife? You know what I'm saying? Like, how, because it could potentially impact your conversation.
She wants me to talk more about how work goes through the week, because I never bring it up, like, at all. Like, not at all.
Really?
Never. She's like, I wish you would just tell me more about, like, how's things going? Like, how's business going now? Like, yeah, I never talk about it.
Do you not want to bring it up at all?
I don't talk about myself in a lot of ways. And I know my wife wishes I would do more of that too. Mm-hmm. I'm usually more just the person that's intentional, asking questions and trying to say, how can I serve? So sure. It never is about me in those moments.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, because I'm the opposite, right? Like, I think oftentimes my wife and I will talk about my work. And I think one of the recent, you know, observations or reflections I've had is, like, you know, why are we talking about my work in the times where I'm not working, right? Mm-hmm. I think that there, you know, to Richard's point, there's a time where you're like, oh yeah, I had a tough day, I had a good day, or I'm worried about this, could you pray for me? Mm-hmm. But, like, when you're literally feel like filling the white space and building a relationship around conversations about work, like, mm-hmm. that's when I was like, this isn't right, right? So
that's good.
Yeah.
So I have one story uh-huh. and then one example from a book that I think will hit this home really well. So the real life anecdotal story that I have is my head of sales. He's an amazing individual, also a believer. Majority of the people on our team are believers as well. It wasn't by design. It just got orchestrated that. And I talked to him about being more productive and being more efficient with his time. And I was like, hey, if you're going to block out time in your calendar, do it in the morning and like, don't have decision fatigue, lock in, get the things you need done in the morning. Great. And make sure nobody puts time on your calendar for that. Well, one morning I decided to put a meeting on his calendar during that time. And it was with the leadership team. And I put everybody on that. And I felt like it was important enough to do so. So we had the meeting and I could just tell. And I think as a leader, you really have to be present to be enough to say like, what's going on with your team? And I could just tell something was wrong with him. He was a little bit shorter, maybe not as, you know, open, et cetera. So afterwards I said, hey, let's have a conversation. Like, can we talk? And I'm just like, hey man, like, you know, I know things come up all the time. You know, everything good at home? Like, is there something that I can do to help? Did I do something? Like, I just want to know, like, you just weren't necessarily like the 10 out of 10 usually are. You're more like a 7 out of 10. And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm good. And I'm like, are you sure? I was like, this is the time to talk about it if you need. And he was like, okay, well, I wrote out this, you know, this 5-page email that I haven't sent yet, but I spent like 3 hours typing it up. Yeah. And he just started like sharing his heart. And he was like, pretty much like, we talked about like not blocking this time, like creating meetings on this time. And, you know, you took this time and it really bothered me and all this stuff. And I instantly said, one, I'm sorry. Like, I apologize. And like, I make sure next time, if I ever do that again, I will ask you if it's okay. And I won't ever do it again without having the conversation. I was like, is that fair? He's like, that's fair. And he's like, Dom, you are one of the greatest bosses / leaders like I've ever had. He's like, when I had my old job and I worked at the university, I went home to my wife every single day and I talked and complained about my boss and the work that I did every single day. He said, I have never once went home and complained to my wife about you ever, ever. And that just showed me that what we were talking about, when right. things are really good with your work life relationship and you really enjoy the people you work with, you really talk amazing about people, or you talk about people, right? Because my wife and I, we do talk about people, the people that just had a kid or that their marriage is or their life. Like, we talk about the people in the business, right. but we hardly ever talk about the activity, because the activities that normally talked about is usually comes from venting, complaining, the hard stuff that comes with yeah. it. And yeah. so there's a big difference between somebody that's like really loves what they're doing in the moment versus somebody that's like, ah, this is just such a hard day because this is my life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. I hear you on that, you know, and it's funny because, like, you know, I'll have a conversation with, you know, my fiance about, you know, cause she works at the airport, right? She deals with people, like people.
We won't say which airport.
You know, all I have to say,
Broomfield Airport.
All I have to say is that the worst of people come out at the airport, you know, and it's for her to be able to come home and just kind of talk about her work, for her to kind of unload, mm-hmm. right? I will sit there and listen to it because I want to, and mm-hmm. I want to hear how her day went. And, you know, same with her. She wants to hear how my day went, you know, but it's, I totally agree with you. When you have good people you work with, like, you don't talk about really the work, right? You talk about how good people are, right? Like, yeah. you know, yeah. It's yeah. My yeah. work is my work. It's yeah. it's the same wherever I go, what I do.
Yeah.
Right. Whatever company I go with, it works the same.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But the people, very different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Your relationship with how your wife is, how you lead her and support her, is like the epitome of what the other part of what I was going to share is the book. There's a book called The Go-Giver. Mm. And if anyone hasn't read it, it's an incredible book. But the premise in one of the stories is that the husband and wife, they're on the verge of just like their marriage not being great, all of this stuff. And what ends up happening is they both go to work and then they both come home, and then 5-6 o'clock comes around. And every single night they hit this on repeat where they come and just talk about work and they complain and they vent to each other back and forth. Mm. And they're fighting for attention. They're fighting for who can speak. Like, they're just, they both want to talk. And one of the days the husband decided that he wasn't going to do that. He wasn't going to be the one to actually vent and talk about work, but he was just going to sit there and listen. And his wife listened for hours, or he listened in hours and hours of his wife just doing it. And they went to sleep in the best place they've ever been in a relationship. Mm-hmm. They went, and I think it's something along like they cuddled, they woke up, she woke up, wrote him a letter of like, this is the great, I don't know what really happened, but this was the greatest night like we've ever had together in the longest time. And all he did was listen. He didn't do anything else.
Yeah. It's funny how, you know, whenever it, when it comes to work, right. And that's coming back to our main focus of how work and our faith, you know, come together, how work really impacts our lifestyle, our family. Right. And to be able to place God in the middle of that, like it's, I don't know. It's refreshing sometimes. So, you got more questions, Caleb?
I do.
What are you doing over there,
dude? He's playing Pac-Man.
No, I'm looking at my questions, man.
Playing Tetris?
Looking at my questions. So I think, you know, we've talked about a lot of the healthy ways to think about work, you know, think about being present. I guess what habit or mindset about you kind of creeps in that pulls you away from who you want to be? Like what's something that you're aware of that remains kind of a thorn in your flesh, to use the Paul example?
I think at this stage of life, it's different and than it would have been maybe 5-7 years ago. And for me right now, I've been in professional business for enough time to where I try to eliminate those things really quickly. Right. It's even been to the point where like, I just love chess so much. Like I'll let chess distract me. Right.
You're a chess player?
Love chess. Dude. Like I'll rock out on, if you want to play anytime.
Oh, dude, I love chess. You kidding me?
Yeah. Amazing. There you go. No, that's good.
Watch your train of thought there.
And I also realized from just like a work perspective, the man who tries to chase more than one thing, you know, the guy who tries to catch two rabbits catches none. That's like the saying. And putting all your energy and focus into one thing, you'll have more compounding efforts. I see that a lot in just in general. People are like, oh, like I have this side hustle over here and then this side hustle over here. And then I have this W-2 job over here and then I have to take care of this over here. And usually it never creates enough momentum to steward your time and energy well enough for like what the Lord would actually call you to. So for me, I have to do a really good job. And now just saying no to certain relationships, saying no to certain outings, saying no to Netflix at certain times, saying no to activities that don't add value to my family, add value to my faith, and add value to my work at the end of the day. And so we all only have so much time and energy. And I think that the number one thing that we can do is learn to say no and say yes to the things that matter most.
Hmm. What do you got, Jeff? What was the question? What habit or mindset?
Yeah, what creeps in that you know about yourself that puts you in a spot where you're not the person you want to be? Hmm. It's your thorn in your flesh when it comes to work.
So for me, it was saying yes to too many things at times.
Yeah.
So now he's proactively saying no.
I got some of that. I'll say yes. And some of my saying yes is I don't want to let people down. Mm. So I'll just, I'll do that.
Are we all here at this table, like, kind of people pleasers?
Not anymore.
So
once upon a time, it definitely was.
I was gonna say I know that that's a popular thing to kind of label it. Oh, I got a problem with people pleasing. I don't know many people that aren't, especially in our culture, that are. They just don't want people to be angry at them, and that's where a lot of my people pleasing comes from. I'm like, yeah, I can do this for you. I can give a little more, and I think a lot of that is. I think that's what God wants from me. You know, he wants me to help out, you know, and I don't know if every time I've said yes, that is necessarily a healthy thing or what God wants. But I always just think, if I can help out, why not?
Yeah. It's tough.
Which is true, but it's also, there's a line and there's boundaries, and boundaries are hard for me.
But you have to think about it. Is there like a detriment? Is there a detriment, right, to you saying yes? Is it going to cost me something?
Right.
It's lost opportunity cost.
It always, opportunity cost is a great description of it, because mm-hmm. it's always going to cost you something. Mm-hmm. Even little acts, it's like, well, I'm doing this means I can't do that. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, it's tough when your dad and your kid ask you for something. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to lean in and, you know, can I do this? Can I do that? And at some point, you've got to know.
So is that like to Caleb's question, original question, right? Is that going to, you saying yes to everything, is that going to pull you away from who you want to be as a person?
Well, what I was going to say in answer to his question was that coupled with being lazy sometimes. I mean, sometimes I'm just drained and I'm like, no, I'm not going to do anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's a weird mix of, yeah, I'll help. God wants me to help. And then all of a sudden at some point I'm like, I can't do anymore. I'm just going to watch TV and I'm not present, like you said, and all that.
Mm-hmm. So you're 100 miles per hour or you're 1 or 2 miles per hour.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But maybe the saying yes is what's taking the energy. So you now feel lazy because you're not doing the things that are the things that are the most productive. Like if you said yes to only the things, then you have all the energy and then you feel better about resting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, lately what I've found the most productive thing I can do sometimes is just go take a walk.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Go take a walk outside. And I, from what I've been told by my wife, I have really bad tunnel vision, which I work in computers and a lot of programming. And a lot of times it's just a monotony of, okay, I've got to do this, but then I got to do it 600 times. So let's keep going. And, you know, I can finish this by noon if I just keep going and plowing through. And a lot of times I'll just say, I don't need to stop. I don't need to, you know, I can work with this, I can work that. And yeah, little more here, little more here, take from this. And then next thing you know, you're just stuck in the tunnel. You never get out.
Yeah. What do you think, Caleb? What's your thoughts
on my thorn? My thorn in my flesh. I mean,
are you going to give us the job interview answer? My thorn is I work too hard. I'm too dedicated.
How many times have I heard that?
No kidding.
I work too hard. Give me a break.
No, I think it goes back to a lot of what we were talking about around, you know, being a former athlete, the competitiveness and wanting to be the best and wanting to be better than people around me, not for make them look bad, but just to feel that sense of, you know, competition, putting work in and competing, right, is always the thorn in my flesh. Like, you know, I had a conversation one time with like, well, just why can't you be, you know, if you got 5 people on your team, why can't you be second, you know? And I always think about being first and winning the spot and making sure that, you know, people recognize that I worked the hardest or I, you know, had the best X, Y, and Z, right? And I think that's been something that I've been working on over the past couple of years to just say, like, at what cost, right? And also, is that helping others on the team? Like, if I focus more on my direct reports, if I focus more on my teammates' success, we actually do a lot better, which is most sports, right? Unless you're in a one-on-one, you know, one individual sport. So I think just being in the midst of winning a spot, you know, making teams, like all that, you just develop this mentality that you have to win and you have to be the best to get the one spot. So
that's good. What you described was first, Caleb, is pride, ego, chasing significance. Mm-hmm. And the second Caleb was Jesus, servant, taking a step back, humility. And it was really cool to hear the contrast. Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And I will say, you know,
that's good.
That's really good.
That's good.
And I think that's, you know, Richard, you talked about this, and I think many people have talked about this. Like, that should be our goal. When we walk into any space, whether it's work, our families, whatever, we need to be a presence that points people to God. And it's amazing how successful people have been around me on my teams, you know, direct reports, and how successful I've felt when you get that energy off yourself, right? And I'm not saying that I have it figured out, But what I have figured out is that I need to do something differently than what I was doing before, right?
Cool. So.
What about you? Did you answer that?
No.
Your thorn in the side?
So, my thorn in the side. You know, I was at a. It was me. I think we all kind of touched on it a little bit. Just trying to please people all the time. We want people to like us, right? I want people. I go to a job. I want my coworkers to like me. I meet people. I want them to like me. I was like that. It was bad at one point in my life, and I started reading books about it, and one of these, the one book that I read, really changed my perspective on it. And the book's called Not Nice. And I think I read that book a couple of times, and it really just helped me with being able to say no, right? Mm-hmm. You know, no, I don't want to do that. Or just not, or just really having the confidence to be able to say no, having the confidence to be able to speak up, having the confidence to be able to share my faith, you know. When I first started attending our men's group in, you know, Bible Brothers and Beer, I was a guy in the corner, not saying a thing. I didn't say nothing, you know, because I was afraid of people. If I said something, they would, you know, I would be judged. You know what I'm saying? And I've grown a lot. I want to say I've grown a lot when it comes to, you know, not being that guy in the corner, you know, because I didn't want to open my mouth because I wanted people to like me, right? Mm-hmm. Now it's like, okay, you like me or you don't. I don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds, like I said earlier, it sounds insensitive when I say I don't care. It's not that I don't say that as a way to upset people. It's just, you know, whether you like it or not, that's my view on it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I love God. I'm going to show my faith. I'll talk to you about my faith, you know? And if you are uncomfortable with talking about it, then okay, let's move on with our lives, mm-hmm. You know? But that was the thing that is in the past. I want to say now is I go through these spiritual valleys. It's very challenging for me. It's very, very challenging. I think anymore it's more of, you know, I feel like I'm good spiritually, but I'm not there I'm not at that level for a very long time. I feel like I'm more at a lower spiritual, I'm in a, you know, in a valley with my spirit and my faith more than I am at the top. And it's very, very challenging because I don't know what it is. I really don't. You know, I pray about it and I don't know. That can be really challenging for me. It is currently a challenge for me right now. You know.
So, do you know the etymology of the word nice?
No. What is it? Educate me.
From Latin, not knowing, ignorant. Old French, foolish, stupid, or silly. Yeah, and tell me if you think this applies, because I made a career out of being the nice guy.
Dude, it is. It does.
And I'm telling you, like, is that who you think Jesus wants us to be?
As for me, no, I don't think he wants us to be that.
I think there's a maybe the better word is kind.
Kind, yeah.
I think there is a kindness factor to that, but, like, there's something about nice. I don't think the two are the same. And a nice guy, like...
There's an example that someone was told me between the difference between nice and kind. And it's the difference of driving in California and or a Californian, they're driving and they see somebody on the side of the road with their tire popped and they're like, oh man, poor guy, you know, and then they just keep driving, right? They're nice, like, oh yeah, you know, poor guy, like they're being really nice, mm-hmm. right? Go to the East Coast.
Hope you fix it.
Go to the East Coast, right? Go next, you know, guy's flat tire, gets out of the car, be like, what are you doing? You don't know how to fix your tire, you dummy? Like, what are you? Nobody taught you how to do this? And then as they're doing it, they're like fixing the tire for them, right? Yeah. And they fix it up. I'm like, get out of here, you know, you know, and they're just like doing their whatever. So it's like they were nice over here in California, but they were kind because they went actually did the activity to help them.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
and I used to live in California. That's accurate. I hope you figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Figure it out. Well, you can help me.
Cool.
All right. Well, last question. I think we all share the commonality that we all have kids.
I thought we were going to talk about sports.
Yeah, we all like sports.
I totally thought the Bears were coming up.
No. It was 5-3 though. So
it was a good win, Caleb.
Yeah, that's right. Come on, yeah, 5-3. Are you talking about me or are you talking about our quarterback?
So anyway, last week,
I think he's a listener.
I kind of knew the Bears were up big, and my son just goes to me, "Whoa, the Bengals just took the lead," and I was like, "Come on." Yeah. Are you serious? Hey. And it was like 2 minutes after they had a whatever 20-point lead.
No, your boy Colston Loveland helped us. So.
Go blue. Go blue, baby.
But the other commonality we have is that we have kids. So I'd be interested to hear your perspective on, and some of you have grown kids, which is cool. Some of you have young kids. What do you want your kids to say about you when it comes to work and faith? When they are old enough to do so and have an opinion?
It's a great question. And I actually think it's a question that we all should sit and reflect on and write out the same as what we want our tombstone to say, and the same what we want people to say at our eulogy about us. Like, what will they actually say? Like, what will they say? And for me, all I want to do at the end of this life, during this life, today, is for my kids to love the Lord with all their heart and serve Jesus Christ. And if I've done that as a parent, then I am a successful parent. Just like I said, my only true definition of success in my life today is, do I have a relationship with Christ or do I not? And if I do, then I am the most successful person on this planet and nothing else matters. And so if my kids, they have a relationship with Christ, they're pursuing them wholeheartedly, and they say, hey, my dad pointed me to Jesus Christ and taught me what it looks like to follow him in my work, in my relationships, my love, all of those things. And I have Christ at the center of my work. And if they can say and do that, then that's all I care about.
That's awesome.
I've thought about this a lot because I heard the Stoics and I'm trying to learn more about the Stoics kind of slowly. They used to say you should think about your own death every day, which I don't do, but I've thought about every once in a while when I remember about that. I haven't thought about that, of what I want my boys to say. I have three boys. I don't know how I want them to remember me. It's kind of a nice challenge what you said of what do we want our tombstone to say. The only thing my wife and I have decided is I want to be cremated, so I'm not going to have a tombstone. So,
what do you want your urn to say?
You can still have something
on the outside.
I'm not going to be in an urn. We decided to dump my ashes in the lake.
What do you want them to say when they dump your ashes?
We cleaned out the closet. There you That's go, Dad. I think along the lines of, in all seriousness, along the lines of what you said, what's more important to me is that they have a relationship with Jesus. I heard Dr. Dobson say this several times as he had this conversation with his kids, and I've always had it. I had it with my dad right before he died, and I've told my kids this. There's going to come a day when you and I are not going to be in this world. You're going to pass away. I'm going to pass away. I likely am going to pass away first. And when we meet again, I want to be there. I'm going to be there. I want you to be there as mm-hmm. well. There's going to be a meeting, and don't miss that meeting.
It's good.
And I guess that's my main thing. I really hope my kids forgive me for all my mistakes. I'm not perfect. I really hope they remember the good times, just like how I remember my dad. But I also know, having lost my dad, how painful that is and how hard that is, and how much you forget an awful lot of his shortcomings, like almost instantly. It's a really hard thing when you lose a parent. And luckily I still have my mom. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful I haven't had to say goodbye to her, and hopefully that's a long way off. But saying goodbye to your dad is a rough thing, and I hope that's a long way off for my kids, but I hope they're mature enough to know that I love them and I tried really hard for them.
It's good.
But more than anything, if I am in glory, and I pray and I know my name is written in heaven, glory be to God. I didn't get there by myself. But if I'm there, I want to have 3 meetings with my boys. And that's all I want from this life.
Yeah.
I want one more with my wife, obviously. Yeah. But I don't parent her. So.
Yeah. Amen. Caleb, I know your question specifically was if you wanted some super tangible stuff. If you do, I can end with some Bible verses that could be more tangible to verses more high level, because I gave a very high level answer.
No.
So I can end with a couple of actual verses that I think would be really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to hear Richard, and then I'll give my thoughts, and then I'd love that. That'd be great.
Yeah. So for me, how do
you
I
got adult want... kids?
I do have adult kids. They're in their 20s. How would they want, how would they talk about me? One of the things that I appreciate is that both my kids are believers and they go to church, and I want to say I'm responsible to, and that's what we do as men, right? We want to be the spiritual leaders in our household. I started volunteering at church, and my daughter followed suit not maybe 6 months after. I've since left that church, but she still goes there and she still volunteers. My son attends that church. It's a big church not too far from here. And they attend it with, my son has his family. He takes his family. My daughter volunteers. She attends church, every Sunday. And that's something I'm extremely proud of. So, to know that they go to church regularly and they believe in God. And actually, we've talked about this. My daughter and my daughter-in-law have a women's group, and they're on Wednesdays at a coffee shop. If you're a woman and you're interested, you go to our website. And there's a link out there.
Ladies and Lattes. That's what I've named it.
It's good.
Used to be sisters and spritzes, but they started to go somewhere else.
Yeah, so you go to our website if you're a woman and you're looking for a women's group. Anyways, so that's something that they started, right? They started on their own, and I was like, wow, that's awesome. Because they're engulfing themselves in the Bible and want to know the word, right? And to learn. So I don't know. I feel like I just want my kids to say that I help them in their journey to get closer to God. Right. Maybe I don't know if that's that'll be on my tombstone. I don't know.
It's great.
Be on my tombstone. What do you got, Caleb?
Yeah. I mean, Jeff talked about, losing a father. I think, ironically, you're sitting in, one of the It's a chair that my dad's was awarded to him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And from his, I think it was his 25th or 30th year at the seminary he was at. And I'm fortunate, like Dom mentioned, you know, his father played a big part in his life. I would actually say I want my kids to say the exact same thing that I would say about my father. Mm-hmm. And I consider myself blessed and lucky to have that. But he was somebody who constantly talked about how much he's blessed, constantly talked about how much he was truly saved from things that could have been, you know, could have gone poorly. And I think what I saw from him was that he realized that he was wise enough to realize that he was broken and he could only depend on God to show him the right way. Mm. I actually see that from a couple religious leaders in my life, in our lives, who they get up on stage. For example, our pastor, every time he's like, I'm not worthy, but like, I'm going to deliver a great message because God's going to do this, right? And so I would love for my kids to say, you know, my dad was broken, but he was wise enough to point himself and us in the right direction. So that'd be the first thing.
That's good.
I think the second thing actually is a fresh one on my mind, is I want my kids to know that I pointed them to the reality that they're loved by God. And I shared this with Dom when we were at the gym. My daughter is just learning how to write and read and all the things, and she wanted to stay with us in the service last Saturday. And she's drawn in my wife's notebook, and we had no idea what she was doing. So about an hour later, we leave church, and my wife opens up her notebook. She shows it to me, and it says, I'm loved by God. So and
it's awesome.
In her, like, you know, kindergarten writing, which is awesome. So we didn't tell her that, but I think we hopefully put her in a spot where she was in church and she heard that from our pastor, right? And I think that's something that, you know, is more important than in this world being told that you're pretty, being told that you're smart. I think to know that you're loved by God is should be the foundation. So those are my things.
That's nice. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's good.
Thanks for sharing all. Thanks for great questions, Caleb. Thank you. I think it had great thoughts on that. And you know, Dom, I know that you have some. You want to finish this out with some verses.
Yeah, I think this will be good for practicality of some actual verses to back up how we as men probably want to be seen or teach about the relationship with work and how we should share with our kids. So. Start from the beginning, from the basics. Genesis 2:15, it says, the Lord took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. So if you actually just like look and break down the verse, right, even before sin was even entered into the world, like God gave Adam a job, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't a curse. Like, and I think that's how we look at work sometimes. Like we look at work as like, it's a bad thing, but really it was a calling. It was a calling for Adam.
Oh, but lazy people look at it like it's.
It's true. But like, not, you know, majority of people look at work that way. Like, unfortunately, you know, it is what it is. Right. But Adam's role was like, it was genuinely to protect and entrust with like what God gave him. Right. And so it's our responsibility, especially as men, to steward and take responsibility for the environment that we've given, right? So that's the first thing. Secondarily, there is another verse that says, 1 Timothy 5:8, anyone who does not provide for their relatives and especially for their own household was denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So in this, Paul makes it extremely clear that providing for your family just isn't an option. It's actually spiritual. God calls us as men to lead and to protect and to provide for those that we take their care for. And neglecting that role, like, it is denying the faith in action. And so I do think that as men, you know, we kind of get into this foo-foo land of the world of, like, you know, roles and gender twists and things like that. But I do think it is our job as men to provide and protect. Like, it just is. And then lastly, Proverbs 13:22. A good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. And I think this is the idea of like the generational mindset that we should be able to like pass down from ourselves to our kids. And when people hear that, they naturally think of money. But when I think of wealth, we can actually define wealth by our own standard, which is, you know, intentional living, in my opinion, is like a true definition of wealth, because it's an accumulation of your relationships, your spirituality with the Lord, your health, and your finances, right? It's more than just money. And when you can teach your kids education and you can teach your kids the things we're talking about of like how to live life for Christ, that is the number one generational thing that you can pass down from generation to generation, right? And Caleb was telling me about his dad, which is the same thing that was in my situation, is the first person in their family to essentially like know and come to Lord to be able to change the next generation, right? Caleb's life has changed and his generations will change because of his dad. And for me, hopefully, my generations will change going forth because my kids will know the Lord, even though I didn't grow up in a household that know the Lord, right? Yeah. And so that's one of the most important things that we could do.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I totally agree with you. I hope that, you know, that like my kids are believers and that they're going to pass that down to their kids and then and so on and so forth, right? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Amen. And that's what the enemy is trying to do right now, is actually separate the family, separate the church, because they know without it, you can't pass down stuff from generation to generation.
Yeah, I totally agree. We're getting attacked all the time.
It's a screw tape letter. It's exactly how you go at it, right?
Great book, by the way.
Yeah.
Anyways. So, so we're going to go, we kind of mashed in together our, kind of our subjects. You know, we talked about the Bible and how it pertains to work. And then we kind of like talked about like, you know, our fellowship portion and how it could, you know, impact us as men, right? We can, what you just listened to, take that and use that to be able to be better at what you do at work, and to be able to have that confidence that you need to be able to stay faithful to God, but also put that passion into, you know, the work you do. I don't know. Look at it from a different perspective instead of just what we talked about earlier. Like, yeah, it's work sucks. I don't want to do this. Well, you have a talent, a special talent that you can, that you have that no one else may have, you know, so take that with, take your confidence and use that. So anyways, we're going to go into the drinking portion of our podcast.
It sounds very counterintuitive from what we just did and the way that you just said that. All right, here's the guy. Yep. All right, time to drink.
Okay. I know.
And it's, sounds good. That's the thing.
I will say that we haven't opened up more than one each, so we'll be able to talk about this pretty quickly.
There's four of us. There's four of us.
And you're drinking
less than
milk.
Less than four that are opened. Yeah. So, you know, that's right.
Drinking milk and water over there.
Well, I was supposed to drink milk, but someone didn't give me a glass.
Dun, dun, dun. Hey,
that's I need it for my kids so they can be strong.
Listen, this is what makes us unique, right? Mm-hmm. Is that we can go at the end of this podcast and talk about what we're drinking.
Yeah.
Whether it's alcohol or milk or water or whatever it is.
Right? The spirit.
That's right.
Yeah. Drinking.
Do you want to say what you brought? Because this is really good.
Do you like that stuff?
This is really good, man.
I got more stuff with that at home.
They're drinking straight whiskey, guys.
Yeah, that's right. Cherry. Straight.
Okay, so I brought, it's from Town Branch Distilling Company. They are in, where are they at? Well, I don't know where they're at. Town Branch Distilling. Hold on one second. I'm trying to figure out where these guys are at. I have no idea.
It's Lexington Brew.
What?
Lexington.
Caleb, say with your chest and speaking to the mic, bro.
Sorry.
I'm trying not to take Richard's spotlight. He's trying to explain the drink that he brought.
I need help, apparently, so just help me out here. I don't know where they're at. Lexington Brewing Company. Yeah,
there we go.
You got better eyes than I do.
There we go.
These old eyes of mine.
I got my readers on.
Okay, anyways. So it's Town Branch Distilling Company. It's called Bourbonola.
It's good.
And it is
bourbon and cherry cola.
Bourbon and cherry cola, made with Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey with natural flavors and caramel color. It's 12% alcohol.
If you have a sweet tooth,
it is kind of
for you.
Sweet. I mean, you can taste the bourbon in it. I mean, but I enjoy it. Like, so, a little backstory real quick. I picked this up from working this huge beer festival that comes to Denver, Great American Beer Festival. So, and that was something that I picked up. Good stuff. I mean,
you know what I like about this? What? I'm a big can design fan, and I think this is a really cool can.
I don't drink or know what cans look like, but it is a cool can.
It's a cool can.
That is a very cool can.
It's simple, yet it's intriguing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only two colors on it.
Is it cooler than a milk can?
I think that you could make a milk can that's equally as cool.
I've never seen a milk can. That's be pretty sweet.
Milk jug?
Can you put milk in a can?
You can do a can.
Did you know aluminum cans have plastic lining on the inside?
I did know that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Found that out recently and was like, what's the difference?
I don't get my milk in plastic anymore. It's all glass.
It's glass.
Glass is the best, man.
Whenever I go to the gym, I have my blender bottle.
Every day. Yep.
Blender bottle. Actually, I've taken changed my schedule. Blender bottles, plastic, day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now I don't know what happened. Like one day I'm like, you know what? I don't want to use plastic anymore. So I went and grabbed a metal container, a metal water bottle, I guess. So I use that now.
I mean, that plastic is better than what Caleb does, which is a syringe. So.
Like I said, it's the thorn in my side. It might be the needle in my side.
Is that the secret, dude?
Hey. That's what he told me the first day we were going to work out. I was like, I forgot what I said. And he's like, yeah, it's just protein and steroids. I'm like, okay, makes sense to why you're now 245.
He thought you were cool, though. Not going to say anything.
It's like I could gain 40 pounds, too, if I start taking that stuff.
Clearly, we're talking about things that aren't on the approved list on this podcast.
Yeah, that's true. So you're going to have to edit that out.
I'm going
to
talk about what I'm drinking just to get us refocused.
That's awesome. I don't know.
I got to go, y'all. My wife wants me to come home. We
can get out of here. Okay. Within the realm of all the things that we're talking about, milk, beer, and bourbon, which is milk is an addition. This is a Mirror Image Brewing Company, and it's Feast Beer. The guy that wrote it on the can missed a letter, but 6.2% alcohol, and this is in Frederick, so just north of us here.
Frederick, you drive up there
in T-town. We did. My wife and I did.
Nice.
Is it good for a different large beer fest? That we host.
The can design
is not as good as the bourbon milk carton.
It's a basic can, right? That's nothing
gets
fancy.
The job done.
It does. I mean, it's a cool, like the mirror image is a mirror.
Yeah.
Stick your finger in there, see if you feel plastic. No, don't do that.
I'm kidding.
don't do that.
Don't do that. No,
so that's what we're drinking.
Cool. Yeah, all good stuff. You know, this was a great conversation this evening, you know, and I do appreciate everyone coming over and to Caleb's home to just do this recording and talk about how we as men can keep God in our life and our faith strong when it comes to our work life. You know, not only that, but also our family life, right? Like, because it's, you know, our family life and our work life tied closely together because our work can impact our family, you know. But listen, here's the thing, right, is if you have God in the middle of it, it just makes it that much more fruitful, you know. So, Dom, I appreciate you being here. Thank you very much.
Glad to have been able to spend this last hour and a half with you guys. Had a lot of fun.
That was awesome. And Jeff and Caleb, of course, thank you, Caleb, for hosting, and, you know, Jeff for your insight on everything, and along with everybody else. So, listener land, thanks for sticking with us. And if you're a man and you're looking for a men's group and you live in the North Denver area, or Denver area for that matter, you know, come join us. Join us on Tuesday evenings at Satire Brewery from 6 to 8. That's when we meet. However, you can show up when you can and leave when you have to. No judgment there. So if you want more information, go to our website, BibleBrothersAndBeer.com. Listen, even if it's just, you know, just to come in one time to listen in, see if it's for you, we'd love to have you show up. And we thank you all for sticking with us and listening, and we hope you have a blessed rest of the week, blessed day, and thank you. God bless. Sitting here.